Stiff Gamut. Toss it. Jeff, if you're watching this, wait, wait, on the side, no.
Let Doc swear at him in Jamaican first. Doc?
No, I quit. Because I won't be able to do the rest of the show.
I broke you with horse outside and now we're done?
I'm done. I'm
over. Put the Dutchie pan on me right now.
Shabba.
Right now.
Oh, God.
You got in every sentence tonight with Shabba.
I'm recording that as well. Welcome to the big show. Yes, happy new year, everyone. Thank you very much for your patience. We've had a couple of weeks off, had some fun, relaxed, had a few drinks, got the smell out of the office. So we're here. We're good to go. Joining me to discuss the week in technology, the fantastic panel that is Mr. Lee Garrett. And we're hoping that writing can compose himself by the time we get to him.
I tell you, I really wish that somehow you could release the pre-show sort of banter that's coming out. It's fantastic. It's better than the show's going to be.
Don't count it. I've got the recording at Livestream I can use. So.
You should do.
It's called the VIP show.
For Patreon subscribers only. That'd be good.
Well, that's what the VIP show was going to be about. How you done, mate?
Not been too bad. It's been a while, hasn't it? But yeah.
No, excellent.
Not been too bad. Good new year so far. Things are good. It's all good.
And do tell your daughter she owes me a podcast.
Yes, I will do indeed. She's when I finally get a chance to see her, between her working and studying for her exams and dancing and whatever, I'm sure she can squeeze a podcast in somewhere.
She promised.
She did indeed, and she was very excited about it.
Well, there you go.
Indeed.
Next to him, it's Kelly G.
Howdy.
Back again. How you doing, girl?
Not bad, eh? How about you?
I'm good. I'm all right. I'm fine. I'm ready to go without Gamut.
Gamut!
Yeah.
It's Dammit, Gamut.
Dammit, Gamut.
Like Rocky Horror.
God damn it.
Actually, I thought we could have a section that's called Ram It with Gamut, because that could really work.
No! not based on some of the toys he picks for his cool thing, mate. No.
Exactly.
You'd have water in your eyes, no question. Doc, how you doing, pal?
I'm doing fine, and you're worried about Paul getting his act together. I'm great. Glad to be back, gang. It's been a busy time, but yeah, so glad to have you.
I know you're
Louis Ronkin. Tell him about it, man. Tell him about it.
Jabba!
And last, but by no means least, righty boy.
And I'm a lover, man. Jabba!
Norwich's answer to Snoop Dogg.
Snoop Dogg, yeah.
Snoop Paul Wright, I like it.
Stupid dog, horse, donkey, we'll do them all, don't worry.
The only difference is when Wrighty goes around with his bitches, he's actually talking about the dogs. not the same as Snoop. No.
Do you guys follow Snoop on Instagram? Pretty much one of the funniest Instagram feeds ever.
Him and The Rock.
Is it wholly inappropriate stuff as well, though?
Oh, deeply.
Not always. Sometimes he has good stuff, but, you know, he posts about his stuff. He's very into football and supporting the community and stuff like that. He has created a football league. So there's that stuff. But then there's also, you can tell when he's just finished like a half a bag of weed and decided to get the Instagram. Because there's like 20 posts in a row, and they're all hilarious. And then he dresses up in his Todd outfit, where he wears a blonde wig and white makeup. And it's pretty hilarious. Snoop is funny.
We got a slight problem that I can't seem to. I have no idea. I can't seem to change off Doc. We've got Doc for the whole show.
Shabba.
Yeah.
Shabba.
I can't do a thing. Innit? Right. Okay. Hang on. I'm gonna have to stop the feed. I'll be back in a sec.
There's voice control, you've got to say Shabba, and then it goes.
Shabba. There we go. No, it didn't
like
work.
Like, you mean it, Rankin.
Yeah,
it's just me.
Louis Rankin, Cuddy Rankin, Shabba Rankin, and his new album from the brother, Ewan Rankin.
Right, hang on. Let me see. And we're back, we've got the issue sorted out, and now we've got Doc off the screen for a while anyway, though I'm sure he'll be fighting to get back on it. In no time at all. The week in tech, what's been going on? Who's brought a story then? Kick us off, someone, for Christ's sake.
You know what, Ewan? You should duck off on your own time.
What?
I said you should duck off on your own time.
Shabba.
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 Oh, God.
All right, you know what?
I think it's all the people
laughter out of my head. Let me do my story first so I can get it. I have
all the people that download this show will have no clue.
I
want
to get to something serious. So can we behave ourselves for a second?
Doc, lead us off on the serious, down serious street.
Yeah, so one of the first things, and it's kind of a big deal because in our country we hear it spoken about a lot, and there's only recently been people doing something about it. So if you follow an organization called Code.org, they're on a mission to help get basically minorities and women especially a little bit further along in the tech community by teaching them how to code, and kind of near and dear to the organization that Kelly works for. And they just put out some numbers on the 9th, and it basically states that they got over 1 million girls and over 1 million minorities, meaning African-American and Hispanics, which I am both. I am both a girl, African-American and Hispanic. And they've been able to add 1 million people to the list of qualified coders and actually start working them in the position of placement so that they can fill some of the jobs, because we have a huge deficit of qualified programmers in our, you know, country here, which is kind of funny considering how much apps and all of that stuff comes out. But a lot of the best stuff, you know, is still basically Middle Europe. And I say big on them for being able to do that. But they basically offer a 20-hour course that gets people started. And then they do these, you know, meetups all around. And, you know, Kelly, if you follow what Kelly does in her nonprofit work, it's the same kind of thing. They're just a larger organization, but it's quite amazing. And I am very both impressed and proud of this because, you know, I was by myself. When I would go to all the nerd ups as a kid, I was the only person of color in the whole thing. And there were no girls. And it was really weird, you know. Granted, I'm old, so that was, you know, back we only had two colors on the screen, but it's really nice to see
and they were both, you know, green.
an organization like this do their thing and be able to actually make an impact. A lot of people talk to smack, but there's no impact. These guys are putting a foot right in the ass of the coding inequality, if you will.
I think it's absolutely fantastic. It's not just there, but it seems to be the in thing at the moment, doesn't it? To target coding as the main dearth that we have in the IT community, because obviously, you know, in the UK, we've talked about it on this show before, the curriculum's changing in order to be able to make sure that kids aged 7 to 8 are starting to learn how to code. It's as though all of a sudden the light bulb's gone off everywhere and everyone's saying, look, you know, this is the future. This is what we need to be teaching our kids. We can't be teaching them how to use Excel and PowerPoint and, you know, all this kind of stuff that at the end of the day is going to be quite irrelevant, isn't it?
Yeah.
Teach them how this stuff works, teach them how to code. I think it's absolutely brilliant. I'm worried I'm going to get left behind. I've never done any coding whatsoever. So this week, I've actually started my courses now. I've started learning JavaScript this week, etc. And I'm going to get my skills up because I'm worried that my kids are going to overtake me. And that's just not going to happen.
You're absolutely right, because I went to a parents' evening. My daughter started high school. I went to a parents' evening about a month back, and I'm talking to an IT teacher about compilers and code and all that sort of stuff. I think that's absolutely amazing, because obviously IT in my day was Word and Excel and all that sort of stuff. But I think it's absolutely brilliant that's coming to the curriculum. And when we were choosing schools, I asked what the curriculum was, and coding was one of the main points, and that was the main reason we chose that school. But it's great that it's actually becoming a main part of the curriculum now.
Yeah,
you know, it was really cool. Lee, if you want, you can go to code.org and try this.
It's really strange, but it's good.
Sorry.
Lee, are you listening to us on a speaker or an earpiece?
I've got you on my earpiece at the moment. I can take it out.
That's right, because you can't... No, you're not hearing Doc, that's all. That's normally for them listening on a speaker. Interestingly, though, from what you're saying there, Doc, there's a survey come out this week in the UK. A survey of UK schools carried out by Microsoft and Computing at School reveals that some worrying statistics that are probably more widely applicable and may be true. Survey revealed that 60% of primary and secondary school teachers are concerned that their pupils have more understanding of computing than they do.
Yeah, and that, you know, that's kind of sad. And I, for a long time, out of the kindness of my heart, I held classes in the summertime for teachers to kind of keep them up on using multimedia because the kids would be more apt. So I taught a bunch of elementary school and I guess what you guys call middle school or colloquial school, we call it intermediate. I taught a bunch of teachers how to take their lectures and put them in a podcast and give it to kids because the kids will tote that around, you know, on their iPods and stuff and be able to study without, the book is just dumb. Reading books and making us learn stuff that is just memory is kind of gone. People aren't into that. Kids are into creating. And the teachers that get it, they do fantastic, and that's the favorite classes. The teachers that don't get it because they're still in the old way of producing factory workers, if you will, that's what our education system was based on. Like, they're losing the students, and then they say, oh, the students are bad, or the students are, you know, untrained, or the parents aren't doing their job, which is partially right. But a lot of it is you have to relearn how to communicate to them because they don't learn the way we did. You know, they learn much better than we did. And one of the most impressive things when they were doing this code.org thing, they did a code hour, and they invited the president. And for all the crap he gets for doing the other stuff that he did, he actually showed up and he sat down and he had a couple like 10 to 13 year old girls teach him how to write a program. So, you know, Mr. Barry Obama, to prove his, you know, coolness as, you know, America's famous coolest president, he actually sat down and he wrote a program and he was tickled when the results did what he typed. And I thought that was funny to watch. Here's the most, you know, powerful man in the country tickled pink because he did basically 10 print, I love British Tech Network, 20 go back to 10. You know what I mean? So it's probably, I don't know what he wrote, but you remember for us, that was the thing, you know, but it was really cute to see him like basically chuckling because he learned how to program from a couple of kids. Yeah. And what I was saying to Lee before he couldn't hear, if you go to code.org, Lee, you can, anybody can jump on these courses. So parents that want to see what their kids are learning or maybe even engage their kids or do something together, you can go and do these things together with the kids. And it starts from about, I think, 5 years old.
But kids have no fear of the technology anymore, do they? That's the most important thing about it. They have no fear at all. Because my daughter will sit here, she'll play Minecraft on the Mac in this office, and she'll be playing Minecraft while she's got her iPad here watching someone else play Minecraft. She's completely engaged, and she's taught me how to play it, and it's just like, it blows me away because they don't have a fear of it breaking or anything like that. They embrace it so readily now. It's absolutely amazing.
Well, you know what's funny
because, you know, when I'm out with, you know, if I'm out shopping with the kids or something like that, and, you know, Amelia, she's two. If she's playing up, then I'll be sitting there with my iPad and we'll, you know, we'll put something on there or we'll play a game on there, etc. And, you know, she even got a book, a normal book, a paper book for Christmas, and she's trying to sort of like turn it and tilt it to try and make it move. She thought it was on the iPad, you know. We have them so early, this technology that they have. It's there's no fear at all. No fear whatsoever. Right. It's brilliant.
Over the holidays, you know, visiting family and stuff, I was at my nephew's, and my brother-in-law was going on and on about how the kid plays Minecraft and stuff all the time. And I said to him, oh, that's cool. I was like, oh, does he make any of his own levels? And brother looked at me like, what? He don't know how to do that. And then the kid goes, yeah, dude, sure, uncle, look, check this out. And he made all of his own levels. And dad didn't even know that you can make your own levels. He goes, look, I had this whole set of maps and everything. And this kid is, I think, 6 or 7. And I'm like, dude, you don't even know that your kid's like programming his own gamer levels. And I bought them that thing, Kelly, we learned about. What is it called? Not pages.
Which
levels.
One? Pixel Press?
Where you draw the thing and you take the picture and then he can do it.
Yeah, that's Pixel it, Press yeah. Floors, yeah, it's called. Yeah, it's phenomenal.
I got him that and he fell in love with it. But yeah, this to me is an amazing story.
So good.
And before we run away, I wanted to say another cool story that came out because I brought up President Obama. And I like the, you know, in our country, we have fun hating on the president. Like at least 50% of the people will hate him, and the other 50%, no matter what he does great, will always bitch about him, even if it's good for everybody. And this week he came out and straight up called out all the ISPs and is like, look, if you guys don't quit dicking around and don't give our people faster, cheaper, local-based broadband, I'm going to have to pull the hand of the president and force you to do it. And he said it as nice as possible, but he buzzed.
But you can
again.
Tell it wasn't like, nice.
You can tell it wasn't nice. He did the condescending algebra teacher that smiles at you and go, you know, if you're not turning in your homework, you're not going to be able to graduate, meaning I'm going to choke the crap out of you. But it's a really if you look at what he talks about, and he talks about how we're being uncompetitive, and he goes through like the top five cities that are killing it at over 100 megabits per second, and we only have like three cities in the whole country that are blanketed like that. Everybody else is just dumb. It doesn't make sense for us, because just the greed of the ISPs and, you know, the cable providers are actually ruining it. And it's all under this fear that people are going to use up too much bandwidth. And as Ewan always says, that's not how any of this works. You know, but I really want to applaud him for coming out and basically putting the pedal to the metal and like, gang, if you guys don't step up, I will pull this country over and bitch slap you real quick. Let me post a link in.
Don't make me turn this thing around. I love it.
It was on my Facebook, but now I can't get the YouTube link. Come here, woman.
I mean, okay, you teach, you support schools, don't you? Do you support them in the teaching and learning element, or is it in the back end? Is it in the teaching and learning element, or is it in the IT back end?
No, it's the back end. It's the provision of the IT networks, etc.
Yeah.
Although I have been involved in helping with IT curriculums at certain schools.
Yeah, but it's crazy because obviously I work in a university, and generally when they have a class going on, they put a big sign outside saying what they're teaching. You go past a lot of IT suites and they're going, we're teaching you Word 2013, like to university students still. And I'm thinking they don't need to know that anymore because they know it. They're probably teaching that because they're probably using Google Docs and Evernote. You know, you don't need to teach them Word anymore. It's those sort of things are so redundant now.
Yeah,
they're still teaching Word. That's the part that's crazy. The kids come in already know how to use Word. You don't know how to use Word. Don't teach that to kids. Well, they know that already.
But they didn't even use Word. I wish you didn't have to. Like, the thing that we need to be teaching kids is not how to use Word. It's how to type accurately.
Thank you.
Like, pick up, you know.
Stop ammo case shit.
Yeah, you can pick up, you know, the app-specific things that you need over time as you use it. Like, I have certain things that I know how to do in Excel because I've had to learn how to do them, and I have certain things I know how to do in other applications, like, you know, the keyboard command for this in the other thing. I have all of that because it's stuff that I've picked up along the way, but the things that I really needed to know are not those skills. The things that I have developed that are unique and useful to me are things like being able to get in good information out of a web search on any search engine, being able to write a concise email, being able to type over 100 words a minute so that the hurdle between my brain and my words is not the input mechanism, being able to think through the process of doing something so that then I'm able to troubleshoot it myself instead of having to ask someone else for help. Those are the kind of things that we need to be teaching kids. Like, a computer science class should not be, here's how you save a file in Word.
Very true. You know what's funny about that?
Let me get down off my soapbox now.
Which is a little particular. It's like when I was back in school late in the beginning of the 2000s, IT was still teaching COBOL. And I remember arguing with the teacher about why are we losing COBOL when we should be learning WebStack, you know, PHP stuff, JavaScript, CSS, straight Java, things like that. And she would first, you know, just like, tell me to shut up and sit back down, blah, blah, blah. And eventually we had this kind of knockdown, drag-out meeting because I got elected as student Congress president. Now she couldn't just shoo me off as a noisy a-hole student in the back of the class like I needed the answer. Come to find out, what happened is they were going around to the banks and the hotels and the travel companies here and asking what skills did they need. And at that time, you know, even in the early 2000s, they were still using those dumb banking systems, and they were still using those, you know, what's it called? Sabre, the thing by American Airlines, the ugly terminals at the airport when you're like, no, you can't sit next to a window. Remember that? And now it's all changed within the last 3 or 4 years. But literally up until about 5 years ago, that was a norm. So they were asking industry what you guys needed, and that's what people were saying because they weren't ready to upgrade. So to Paul's point, I think we're still learning Word because when the unis go out and ask the companies, oh, what do you need people to do in order to be able to have a job? And if you look in the Sunday paper, it doesn't say we need you to word process. They go, we need you to know how to use Word 2013.
Yeah.
And as you know, in most businesses, they're actually still on Word 2003, Word 2007.
Yeah, but Microsoft is quite, they go hard on that. We just moved to 365 where I work, and they're giving every student 5 copies of Office for free. And the only reason they do that is because they want you to get hooked on their system.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's true. And I think that's why the schools are like that too, because the schools get their laboratories subsidized by Microsoft. At least I know ours was here at the University of Hawaii. So what happens is the little BizSpark campus, as they call it now, they're telling the schools that they need to teach this stuff so that when I get into my company and I'm the IT person and I am in charge, I am going to tell everybody word. Ha, they got the wrong dude, because I went into every company ever and I tried to get them off of that kind of crap. But, you know, it's I think that's part of it, is they're doing the let me give you your first hit of crack mentality and see if I can get you stuck when you become a decision maker. And that's disingenuous for everything. Let me just teach you practicum and skills first, and then, you know, maybe I'll brandize you after.
Yeah. Well, I've got an actual measure of that, because one of the departments I work for, we signed up, you know, DreamSpark, which is the Microsoft, it's the free software. We signed up for the premium version, and that means they can get all sorts of copies of Office and Windows and all that. We've got, like, in the school that signed up, we've got 800 students, 5 signed up. Because they don't need that. They're already using other tools that, you know, like I say, save documents in Word. If you're using Google Docs, Evernote, and that sort of, you haven't got to save anything. They're already doing everything in the cloud, and it's accessible everywhere. And that's what they want. You know, things with Word documents, they're accessible on your machine, unless you're saving them to Dropbox and all that sort of thing. And they're probably doing that anyway. They're already savvy enough to be doing that. My daughter's got Dropbox on her phone, on her laptop. You know, she's 11 years old. She can do all of that. You don't need to teach them anything, because they just grab it so easily now.
I think another problem you've got is if I've been in quite a lot of schools over the last few years, and if you look at a typical IT faculty or department, those skills that we feel that the kids need, the teachers don't have them. And in order to be able to get or attract the kind of staff or the kind of teachers that are going to be able to teach that to the kids, well, if they already know all that, they can earn twice as much, you know, actually applying them in the real world rather than teaching. That's something I've definitely found, you know. Teachers don't pay enough, or teachers aren't paid enough at the moment to be able to to attract the kind of people that would be able to deliver that kind of a curriculum effectively.
Well, and as an added bonus, it's not always up to a teacher to get to just haul off and start teaching kids, you know, how to use Dropbox or whatever. It has to go through a really long and involved process. And by the time you've gone through the 5-year approval process to get something done, it's come and gone. Yeah, you know, there's people out there now that are like, finally, I can teach the kids about the MySpace. And, you know, here we are.
Oh, you're so right. Oh, my God, you're so right. Like,
this is really a huge issue to be addressed in education. And it's a huge fundamental issue in education. And it's been an issue in education for a really long time, because it goes back as far as I can remember. My mom was a grade school teacher. I have loads of family who are teachers in various grade levels. And the problem is always, once there's something that they want to teach, the number of hurdles they have to go through to get that curriculum approved, that even just that, you know, not necessarily a lesson plan, but like, I want to teach the kids this other thing, the amount of time it takes to go through that, like, that's why a lot of kids are still learning stuff about, you know, the Berlin Wall, like it's still a thing, is because it's just too much work to have to change it. And that's the issue I would really like to see addressed, because technology is always going to move faster than education can educate it. And so, you know, all of these people are going to all come in, all these kids are going to come in and already know all of this stuff and be bored, and then they're not engaged, and then it ends up being a waste of everyone's time because they're sitting in the room listening to the teacher talk about stuff that they already know. And the teacher's not really allowed to deviate much from the stuff that's already been agreed upon. So, you know, to go back to it, like, you know, if you're teaching the kids about the MySpace, then, you know, you're not allowed to talk to them about Facebook because it'll get you in trouble. And it's rough because, like, nobody's having any fun. Nobody's learning anything. Nothing is gained from that time. And there is nothing, as a kid who went through this in basically every grade level for a very long time, there is nothing more painful than being a disengaged kid bored with what the teacher is telling you. It is frustrating. It is aggravating, and it makes you totally not interested in learning, because the only place you have learning, you know, for a lot of people, the only opportunity to get any learning in is school, and school sucks. So what, you know, what's to be done? And it's really frustrating to be that kid. So I really wish that nobody ever had to go through that again the way I did.
No, but they're learning more on the playground. That's what it is. They know what the Instagram is. They know what the Snapchat is. They know what the Facebook is. Mm-hmm. You know, they're doing that. You know, they're learning that on the playground. They're right. Not learning it in school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a sensible lesson to be taught at school would be how to be safe on social media.
Exactly. It's the soft skill. It's
yeah.
Here's the kind of stuff that gives you a good search, no matter what search engine you use. It's here's the kind of stuff you maybe shouldn't put on the book face. Here's the kind of stuff that, you know, did you know that just because Snapchat says it self-destructs, that if someone takes a screenshot, they've got that picture forever? Do you know that that's a thing? Like,
yeah.
You know, not a lot of people think that stuff through. And I think it would be really interesting to me if those kids were excited. Because kids always have good ideas for apps. I know. I've been there. And I've seen when the girls get together and we start asking them, like, what kind of app would you build? What's a thing in your life that could be made better if you had an app to assist you with it in some way? Whether it's take something good and make it great, or take something that you really don't like and make it suck a little less. And there's all kinds of things that they come up with, and they're such good ideas. And when you've got a room full of them, they all go, wait, what if you did that, but then you did this other thing with it, and wouldn't that be awesome? And then somebody else, you know, riffs on that. And it's not like they don't have the ideas. It's just that nobody cares to ask them or isn't allowed. And it's frustrating for the kids. It's frustrating for the teachers. And I really wish that all of that could go away.
Yeah.
Yep.
Good story. Well done, Doc. That's one story down and 35 minutes gone.
So now that we've fixed education, let's move on to world politics.
Oh, sorry. Did I interrupt someone?
Oh, that doesn't help now. It rings through to the computer.
Nice. No, cool.
Yeah, I know.
Who's got another story for us? Righty?
I'll go there, mate. Well, interesting one that I had a serious one, but I'll go for the more silly one anyway. Is what do you do when you only have 0.5% of the mobile phone smartphone market and your BlackBerry?
You realise that actually that's always been a fairly small proportion of your income.
But what you do is you release an old phone. And they've done it this week with the BlackBerry Classic. Because what you want is a form factor that is, what, 8-9 years old, pre-iPhone? And fair enough, it's running BlackBerry 10. But we all want a 3.5-inch screen, don't we? We all want a QWERTY keyboard. It's just like, at what point do they realize they need to die? You know, the enterprise market is gone. The consumer market is gone. At what point do they think, you know, they released the Passport, which was end of last year, which is just like an insane phone, which is a square bloody phone with ridiculous keyboard and that sort of stuff. Just at what point, you know, are they going to realize that their time is over? Because the market has been claimed now. I think with obviously iOS and Android, even Windows Phone is making market share. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite keen on Windows Phone. We're getting Windows Phones at work, and I, you know, obviously you've had Windows Phone as well, Ewan, and it is a good operating system. But
what is the thinking of
releasing crazy phones and old phones to actually keep a business alive?
It's absolutely mad. You know, BlackBerry remind me of, you know, if you've got like a dog who's, I don't know, between 18 and 20 years old, the back legs have gone, you know, it's lying there, it's, you know, it's like, just get a shotgun and just blow the mother away and put it out of his misery.
Ah, you've got it. BlackBerry's that dog has only got two front legs, and his back two legs are on a little trolley, and he's pulling himself along.
Absolutely. You know,
and he's dragging himself along. I'm going to get there, and one day the front two legs are going to give up.
That's way less generous than I was going to be. I was going to say that they're like the person who wants to connect with the young people, who wears the backwards hat, you know, and turns the chair around and goes, hey, kids, let's rap. Like, that's BlackBerry. Like, late to the party.
And says Shabba.
Late to the party. 10 years behind on like slang and everything else, you know, and trying so hard and, you know, bless their hearts, but sweetie, no. And, you know, I feel like the problem with BlackBerry is that the market has evolved beyond BlackBerry. I'm not saying that BlackBerry didn't make a contribution because it was basically the first smartphone. It was the first time that you could do anything useful with a device that you carried in your pocket because of that keyboard. And that was awesome. Yeah. Like, make no mistake, in their time, they were amazing. But their time has passed. Yeah. And others have taken BlackBerry's torch and run with it, you know, and that's how it evolved into things like the iPhone and Android devices and all that kind of stuff. And clearly the physical keyboard is less of a limitation every single day as more and more people are buying iPhones and Android devices that don't have one. And so I feel bad for BlackBerry. I feel like this, not that they asked me and not that I really know a whole lot about this, but it seems like what they should do is just go to services. Because the reason a lot of places are still clinging to BlackBerry for a mobile platform, you know, in the enterprise is because the BlackBerry enterprise server stuff was pretty secure, and it's something that's been around a long time, so a lot of people understand it, and they want to continue to maintain it. If I were them, I would try and find a way to use that as some sort of mobile device management for iOS or something else so that it's something, you know, and move to services and get out of the hardware game because clearly they're not getting it. And see if there was something else they could do with, like, BlackBerry Messenger and the BlackBerry Mail service and stuff like that that people already have installed. You know, what if we could make it so that this ran really awesome on iOS? Fantastic. Well, wouldn't that be great? Like, that would be the smart move for them to make, I think.
Yeah, well, they moved BlackBerry Messenger to iOS and Android, and that didn't really take off, did it? But what the move they're doing now, which is going back to an old form factor, and the phone, because it's like a 3.5-inch screen phone. It's actually heavier than the iPhone 6 Plus in 2014, in 2015, should I say. And it's almost like you want to go to Microsoft, who own Nokia now, and go, well, you want to release the 3310 again. You know, it's almost crazy of an idea, because it's not going to work.
Haven't Nokia done that? They've
released they need to be Old Yellered. There's no question. Like, if they're not going to pivot, if they're going to continue to do this, like, it's just going to be sad.
Yeah, but you is right. Yes, yeah, they have released, is it a £29 phone? I think Microsoft have released a £29 phone, haven't they?
I thought so. I had heard something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's not where is that the emerging market? You know, that's the issue, because I don't think BlackBerry's going to take off like that because they haven't got the app. Well, no, actually, I did read that the BlackBerry now runs Android apps, but you can only get them from the Amazon App Store.
Yeah.
Which isn't great.
Right.
And it's a budge. So, but just as an idea for a failing company, I just thought, you know, the passport was a daring idea. I get it. You do something really crazy. I get it. But you release a form factor that was circa 2003. I don't get it.
Nope. Lee?
And I wonder who's holding the reins on that.
I was just about to say, Winter, I just put a link in the chat room. And if you look at the actual URL, it's got the word pricks in it, which I think pretty much sums them up.
Oh, that's the wrong link.
Oh, my goodness. Huh. I wonder why what Samsung would want with BlackBerry. I wonder if it's services.
Ooh. Oh, my word. He's absolutely right. But, yeah, I just thought it was weird. You know, it's like, you know, we like classic things. You know, an iPod classic was nice, but they killed that. A BlackBerry classic should have died a long time ago.
Yeah.
And it's just a really odd kind of move. You know, you used to like your BlackBerry, but you moved to something else. But just come back for that keyboard. Because I know that a lot of companies release keyboards for iOS and Android, you know, very similar BlackBerry keyboard. Wasn't it Ryan Seacrest? I don't know if our American friends, didn't he release a keyboard for iOS?
The Typo, and BlackBerry smacked it down, and now they've released a second one.
Yeah.
Have they been?
It's laughable because of him, but it's actually a good keyboard.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, my personal belief is I want to laugh because he's such a tosser. But.
Oh, completely.
Okay.
What? Everyone frozen. Doc's frozen.
What? Uh-oh. Can you hear me?
Hear me?
You've got to look at the picture.
I hear you in.
You've got to look at the picture I've just retweeted. It's brilliant.
Oh, no. What's
he said? Duck's gone.
Uh-oh. I hate when that happens.
Ewan's retreating into picture.
Anyway, there we go.
Oh, no.
BlackBerry's portfolio for patents is around $3 billion worth, though, so that's why I think Samsung would want. Probably cost them a fortune. Lee, what have you brought for us, mate?
I've got a bit of an obscure story this week. Sometimes the best ones are they. This one comes from Denmark, which I don't think we've actually ever covered Denmark on the big show, but this is a pure class because the Danish Consumer Council have come up with a scheme, which is all about how you know when you install new apps, and then as soon as you start the process, it'll turn around and say, this app needs access to your contacts, or this, you know, we need access to your calendar, we need access to your GPS, etc. Well, what they've done is they've performed what's known as a hidden camera prank, and they've got a camera in a baker shop, and what they wanted to do was see how people would react to the shop assistant doing exactly the same as what one of the apps would. So somebody will go in and they'll buy, like, you know, 4 buns or something like that, and the shop assistant will say, okay, that'll be 4 kroner, and can I have your last 5 text messages, please? Or can you let me have your assistant's phone number, etc. And they've released a video of it, which I'll post a link in the chat room. And it's really quite amusing how it raises awareness of the fact that you wouldn't ordinarily give all this information over if somebody asked you, likely. So why are you going to trust an application with all of your contact information, all of your calendar, all of your GPS, you know, all of your phone history, etc.? I think that's quite it's quite an important point that quite often gets ignored. I mean, I have to with my family, as soon as I'm installing a new app for them or I'm watching them do it, they'll say, yeah, okay, yeah, I'll accept, you know, contact. You can access this, you can access that. If somebody turned around and they said to you, can you give me your mum's phone? You're not going to do it, but you automatically do it when you install a new app. And I just thought that was a really, really good scheme that they're doing.
So, what? I mean, how many people refused?
Nearly everybody refused.
Right.
But there were a few that, for example, there's one sketch in there where they said, what did you do last night? And this person told them exactly what they did. And they said, oh, can you give me the phone number of that place where you went to? And they did. And it was the last text message you said. And this person got their phone and showed them, you know, which was mad. Whereas there was another instance where the shopkeeper, they actually left the baker shop with the customer and started walking alongside them. And the customer was saying, what are you doing? The shop assistant just said, oh, I just want to know where you live. And just carried on walking with them down the road. It's absolutely fantastic prank. But it really does raise some good awareness. I'm just popping the link in the chat room now for that.
Cool.
See, I have no comment on this. Go especially on. With Lee here.
Why?
Because me and Lee met on Twitter prior to the bash last year. And he sidled up to me in his car prior to the bash. I got in with him, having never met him before, so I would give anyone anything.
Ah, true. I could have been a nutter.
See? You got you were right. Get in my car. I was like, yeah, I'll get in your car. So, yeah, you have the contacts, you have bloody family history, anything you like, mate.
Yeah.
So, I'm the worst person to ask about this.
You say that as well, though, but, I mean, there's a significant number of people around BTN now I wouldn't think twice about meeting them, having spoken to them an awful lot on Twitter. And, you know, the very first bash that we had was me just saying, who wants to come for a party? Come to my house. And when people said, yes, fine, I gave them my address. And people would turn up on the door and I'd be going, so you're Steve Neighbour? And he went, yeah, I'm Steve Neighbour. Bloody hell, nice to meet you, mate. And I've been talking to him for a year on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden I meet him and it's just like we've never not met before. So it's and the Dave that came and helped me with the first bash that we had getting us going buying the stuff and that Dave Potter, he was over at a place in Yard and he said, how do I get to your place? I said, I'll come and get you, mate, if you don't mind coming around and helping me get all the food and stuff together. And he's like, no, that'd be great. And we got in the car, shook hands, how you doing, mate? Great. And the next 30 minutes of together was just like we hadn't seen each other in 10 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just filling the gap. So
you're absolutely right. The first bash I came to, 3 or 4 years ago, we'd never met, and I just came to your house in Birmingham.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, it's just one of those things, isn't it? You know, you've got to have a trusting nature, haven't you? You've got to be sensible about what you are giving away and be observant about it. But I think you kind of know when it feels right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Twitter's a very perceptive medium. I think people know when they're being spammed. People know when they're being suckered on Twitter very easily. It's incredible how perceptive it can be done. But I think this is a problem. I mean, there's got to be a question about apps. But one of the things that annoys me is, like, we need you to tell us your address and postcode when you buy something in a shop, like an electrical shop. And they go, why? So that we can, so it's for your receipt. No, it's not. Just give it to me. Well, I can't give it to you unless you give me your details. See what I'll buy on Amazon then. Piss off.
Yeah, I had a thing like that very recently when I got my iPhone 6. I got a text from Three, and it was kind of an offer. You know, you can end your contract early, get an iPhone 6. And it was like, give us your phone number. And I was like, I'm not really sure about that. So I tweeted Three on Twitter, and they said, I said, well, I've got this text saying it's going to be you, but I'm not sure of it. And Three turned around to me and went, oh, can you send us a screenshot of it? And I was like, okay. And I sent it to them. They went, oh, yeah, that's us. And they weren't even sure what they were sending out. You know, it's a bit worrying. Oh,
my gosh.
Mm.
Yikes. You
know, they didn't even know they were doing that promotion. And the fact that I sent the screenshot, they went, oh, yeah, that is us. Because I think a lot of people do it on behalf of them. But it is quite worrying where people just go, you think, yeah, I'll have an iPhone 6 early. And you'll give me all your details. I was like, I'm not doing that.
Definitely. Oh, Lee's gone. There we go.
Oh, no.
Kelly, it's your turn.
You have an incoming call from Soliam CAs.
I can't imagine what it... Oh, well, no, it does say my name, so I wonder what it sounds like when I call you on Skype.
Kelly G.
Is that what it says?
Yeah, it says, what did
That's
I say?
Awesome.
I forget.
Yeah, I think you said sugar britches.
Sweet sugar britches. Incoming call from sugar britches.
Yeah. Shabba.
Something like that. Kelly, your turn.
Sugar welcome. Okay, so I have what I think is a really, it's American, but I think you guys will appreciate it for the spectator factor. So the Federal Trade Commission in the U.S., it's a governmental agency, and their whole point is basically to make sure that businesses aren't screwing their customers. Or at least if they are, making sure they're paying a fair price for it. And the FTC, and this gets complicated later, has filed a lawsuit against AT&T because AT&T, this will make Doc extra happy, because they don't like that AT&T is throttling their unlimited data customers.
Tsk.
But wait for it. So here's the deal. So they took AT&T to court, and because they told because AT&T says, you have unlimited data, and then what they really mean is, you have unlimited data until we feel like choking it for you. And so the reason that this is hilarious is as follows, because AT&T replied to this lawsuit by saying, what do you mean suing us? We're common carrier. You can't sue us because we're Title II. Which means if the court agrees, then the Federal Trade Commission will bounce it out. For those who don't know, the FCC, the Federal Communication Commission, is the one that floated the idea of maybe mobile providers should be a common carrier because we treat a mobile phone the same way that we treat a landline phone. So maybe this should be a common carrier issue. And every cell provider went, no, because they don't want to be regulated, because if they're regulated, then they can't keep messing with people. They can't charge an unreasonable rate. They can't do all the breathtaking overage charges and on and on and on. So I think this is funny because they're basically trying to say we're Title II when we feel like it. And not the rest of the time. So it's going to be interesting to me to see how this plays out. Like, this is very, I just want to be, this is one of the few times I've wanted to sit in a courtroom and watch it unfold. Because I want to know how this is going to go.
Hmm.
And you know, that's very, you know, common. Now, unfortunately, like what AT&T is doing is it's dumb and it's messed up in all cases, but there are a huge segment of human beings. I think it's just something that human beings do, whether we like it or not. We like to play both sides of certain fences. Mm-hmm. And so, for instance, and this is a really bad example, but it's an extreme example that helped make the example. So nobody kill me. We always
Doc Rock looks forward to your letters.
We're always talking about sexual equality, sexual equality, sexual equality. But if a man was to haul off and punch a lady, oh, he's an a-hole. Because, well, we're bigger and stronger and meaner. But in sports, I don't get to
speak for yourself.
Meet you because we're bigger and stronger and meaner. No, I'm just saying, don't get angry because that's the point. You heard the arguments thousands and thousands thousands of times.
I'm kidding.
Right? So it's like, I need to be an equal part of the male-female equation until it comes to certain things. Like, why don't you put the seat down instead of me putting the seat up? You know, like, it doesn't work. And in a way that we're so used to that it's probably going to get passed by unnoticed. Like, Hawaii is very Hawaii. We are Hawaii. We're a sovereign nation. We stand on our own. Screw the U.S. government. Give us back our land. Don't you dare not call me American. I will kick your butt. I am not a foreigner. Don't charge me more for shipping because I am the 50th state. We're part of the flag. Blah. You know what I'm saying? So here is really bad because, you know, you're kind of sort of both, right? And
yeah.
I think anytime you're on that little edge, that just becomes messy no matter what. I would love to see AT&T finally have it handed to them for doing this. They did just get in trouble for the bill stuffing. And hopefully, you know, too many, you know, like the third strike thing. Okay, you've been caught twice. This one is also you, so you just lose automatically no matter what. That would be cool, but I kind of see their position as much as I hate them.
Blimey.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds a bit cake and eat-ish though, mate.
Well, yeah, no doubt. 100%. And that's what I meant. By we're very as human beings, we are all naturally duality on certain things. We're very cake and eat us on certain things, but we would normally not let that slide unless that slide was going to be beneficial for us. And it's unfortunate, but we tend to do that a lot. And I wish we didn't, because it would make arguments so much better.
Yes, it would. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2.net. They're superb. Check them out. Come to britishtechnetwork.com/... What?
Batwitch, the automatic seat opener on Amazon. I'm sorry, she got me. It just came out. I should have muted.
It's all right. Go to britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors and you'll find UK2's link. Click on that link and you should be able to get yourself some great deals on some stuff that they've got. Their customer service is second to none. You will not be let down thereafter. And they're great. They've supported us for the last 5 years, and there's no end in sight of when they're going to stop supporting us. So please look after them because they look after us. And send a message to them. Send a message on Twitter that says, I'm with UK2 or I love UK2 because they support BTN. Because they suck up all our bandwidth costs and that kind of stuff. So we'd be broke without them. The server we're on is £400 a month worth. So it's not an insignificant amount to give us. So cheers to them. Cool things. Start us off, Mr. Garrett. You're on mute.
I'm not on mute anymore.
Good man.
Hey.
Anyway, can you hear me?
Good. Yes.
Excellent. Okay, I got from my wife for Christmas something that I've been after for eight. I've always wanted a pair of Bose headphones. And Bose just recently released some new wireless ones because I can't deal with wired headphones when I'm out and about because I'm always snagging them on like drawers or door handles or something like that and then yanking my ear. Can't stand it. So the new Bose SoundLink headphones, quite pricey. They're about £220, I think, but these things are absolutely awesome. They hold charge for around 15 hours, but I've got 18 hours of solid use out of these, so I charge them up on a Sunday night and they will last me all week. They're fantastic. And with the weather that we've got at the moment, it's really, really cold down here on the coast. They are the warmest earmuffs I think I've ever had. So comfortable. Really, really good. I can't recommend them enough. Just going to post a link in the chat room. But the new Bose SoundLink on ear headphones, they're fantastic. And the sound quality, awesome.
Cool. Good ones. £220, you say, so. Yeah, not cheap.
Yeah, they are. I think my wife said she got them a little bit cheaper. I can't remember what deal she got. But, you know, it's very much like Apple with Bose, isn't it? You know, you it's very difficult to get bargains on them. They are pretty much price fixed everywhere.
No, absolutely. Kelly's put a link in the chat room for us. Thank you, Kelly. Good pitch. Kelly G, what have you got for us?
Gosh, I actually don't know.
Just come back to you?
Yeah, make Dark go and then come back to me.
Okay. Dark, what have you got for us?
It's actually on the other side of the room, and I was going to go and grab it, and then Kelly put me under the spot. But it was a thing on Kickstarter. I do believe they are completely available to buy right now. But my favorite bag company, the Rickshaw Bag, put out an incredible bag that is highly reflective. But when you look at it normally, it just looks like a normal bag, backpack, satchel. They got a bunch of different versions. But it's basically like a 3M reflective material. And I got mine, you know, finally after the Kickstarter was over, maybe like a week ago. And it's so cool. Even when I'm riding at night and the car turns the corner, I can see my bag lighting up the ground underneath my bike because it's so bright.
Which one is it? Is it the Sutro?
Yeah, I didn't get the Sutro because I look like, I can't even explain it, like I'm wearing a jetpack. Because the Sutro is so small on my big body. So I got the bigger size message bag.
Oh, okay.
And so it's kind of on my right hip as I'm riding. And the car will turn the corner. And it reflects so bright that I have this glow underneath my bike. Like I am being protected by angels. And if you happen to drive in a state that's 86% Asian, that's not a bad thing. Because a lot of bikes get hit here. And now you're not going to get hit. It's really cool.
There you go.
It's super, super, super nice. I have a rickshaw addiction, I will admit, so maybe I'm biased. But it's an amazing bag. It's well built, and it fits all my kit, and I'm not going to get banged. People can't say I didn't see the 6-foot, 250-pound black man on the bike.
Now, what you're really talking about is the fabric, because the fabric was the new... The new thing in all of this, right?
You keep talking, I'll grab it.
Okay. So I'm pretty sure what he's talking about is that there's a new reflective fabric that Rickshaw has as an option for their bags, because you can get it in all kinds of colors. And the cool thing about Rickshaw is that it's completely customizable. You can change, you have a wide variety of materials. The ringing always distracts me. You have a wide variety of materials that you can use. You can use quarter nylon. You can use, there's a tweed that they have and a waterproof as well. And then you get to choose the color of the outside, the color of the inside, the color of the trim, and even the color of the little logo that's on the bag itself. And it's super fantastic. And the reason that this is awesome is because, like we were talking about, they now have a super reflective flavor of this fabric that you can get that's pretty awesome. I put a link to the blog post in the chat room so you guys can check it out. It's pretty nifty to get to see the reflective in person, as Doc can totally attest.
Yes. It's hard actually to show up on a little webcam, but you really notice it when it's dark out and the light hits it. It's like epic. So I would say if you ride a bike or you just want to be seen as you walk around a walking town, get one. And it might save your life one day.
Doc, how many bags have you got?
Oh, God, I'm a
bag. All of them.
Addiction, haven't you? It's like
all of them.
Just rickshaw alone, I think I'm up to close to 20. I am really bad. And the thing is, I don't buy cheap bags because I feel like they're going to fall apart. And I've, you know, I had a backpack break on me when I was a kid, and it broke a laptop. And ever since then, I only buy good bags. Like, no more.
I think this is your fourth rickshaw pick, I think, or something like that over the course of the last
really?
Year.
Okay, I'll stop.
Probably.
No, more rickshaw no, it's good, it's good, it's good. You know, I'm on the lookout for it as well. And that one that you've just done tonight, that looks really good. I really like the look of that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I really like and the cool thing about the rickshaw stuff is that they will customize it for you. So if you're somebody like Doc who needs a lot of backpack strap, they can put a longer strap on the backpack for you. And if you're Kelly and you put on a backpack and the extra strap dangles to your knees, they can make it shorter for you. And it's super awesome that they have that sort of capability. And it breaks my heart that we can't go back to Macworld on an annual pilgrimage there, because that's what we always end up doing. And it bums me out that, that's not going to happen. But if you do get a chance, if you are in San Francisco, you can go there and you can touch all the stuff and pick it up and see how it feels. And it's really, really great. I really like them.
I think they put that in the computer, you know, Kelly, because when Mark sent me this bag, mine's is bigger than Jerome's. So I think from the
they first must have year, a permanent like.
No, oh, yeah.
Add 6 inches of strap.
I think they added it to the thing, because now when my bags come, the strap is of length for Fat Guy. Nice. I didn't even think about that. But yeah,
did Mark's cool. Did you just say, Kelly, they can give you a 6-inch strap on?
That's a Jeff Gamet.
That's what I heard.
Channeling Jeff Gamet.
Excellent, mate. Well done. Right, are you done? You're not done.
No, I'm done. Maybe one for our, more for our UK listeners. I don't know if it comes across very well, but as you may well remember from the 90s, there was a very popular game called, Blockbusters.
Oh,
and you can now get it for iOS.
I'll have a pee, please,
as you can
bro.
See there.
What?
And it is unapologetically 80s. So Ewan and Lee must remember Blockbusters. Please tell me you do.
Yeah, yeah. I'll have a pee, please, Bob.
You'll have a pee, please, Bob. But this is, it's 99p on the iOS store. And it is absolutely moves the game perfectly. You can get your mascots. You can have a pee, please, Bob. You can do the gold run. Gold run, that actually sounds really rude nowadays, doesn't it? But anyway. It's absolutely great little game. You can have one or two players. Just over Christmas, we got that played on the iPad, and just a fantastic little bit of nostalgia for everyone who used to love Blockbusters. And Bob Holness, who everyone forgets, was the original James Bond.
What?
Bob Holness was the first ever James Bond.
No, it was David Niven.
No, on the radio.
Oh, right, okay. Be sure to clarify, eh?
Yeah, Bob Holness was the first James Bond.
I was going to say, I thought it was David Niven, but... Okay.
Oh, there you go. Anyway, Blockbusters.
It probably wasn't David Niven. So there you go. Maybe. I don't know. It's Kelly G, your turn.
Okay, so I'm still not sure, so I'm going to give you guys just a tip that I have that I think is super handy. And this is something I think a lot of people may not consider. So I don't know how well these are going to show up on the camera, but it's little clear hairbands for cable wrangling and stuff. Like normally you would use these to put on the end of a ponytail or something like that, mm-hmm. like if you're Kelly, can't really do that. So I use these to wrangle cables all the time. It's super, super awesome. And the nice thing about them is they're clear, and because they're this particular variety, they're made of silicone instead of rubber. Because if you've ever put rubber band, a regular rubber band around a cable, and then you went back for it a couple years later because you had to fish it out of the bottom of box of cords for one reason or another, and you go to pull the rubber band off and it disintegrates, that sucks. These don't. And they stay stretchy, and they're super handy. So I like that, but my bonus pick is going to be something that it's macOS and iOS, unfortunately. So it's going to be like the bonus is PDF Pen 7 from Smile Software is really awesome. And the nice thing about it is it allows you to edit PDFs. Version 7 just came out for the Mac. If you haven't checked it out on iOS, it's super fantastic because it's a nice way to either annotate an existing PDF or to... you know, if you need to make some sort of edits or something to a PDF, you can always do it within the app and send it back. So the most common use for a lot of people is to annotate something and send it back to somebody. You know, here's the changes that need to be made. This is the wrong color. That's spelled wrong, whatever. The other nice thing that you can do with it is you can use the tools within the app to sign something and send it back. No more print it and then sign it and then scan the printed one and then send the printed one off. You can do it all in one step. Open up the PDF, sign it with your stylus, with your finger, whatever, and then reply immediately. And the turnaround on that is a lot quicker. So PDF Pen is super, super awesome. There's a ton of new features in version 7. There's upgrade paths available if you already have a previous version, and you should totally check it out.
Excellent. Good pick. Thank you very much. Now then, do you remember this thing? My little gimbal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, my little super cool gimbal, right.
Oh, yeah.
I've expanded. This is a Rode 3-meter audio boom. They're £80. You can get them from loads of places, Amazon, etc., etc. But what's kind of cool is I was sitting looking at this thinking, there's got to be something I can do with this that's really, really uber cool. So I went and looked at the measurements. That is 22 mil. That is 22 mil. These are 22 mil pipe clips, which cost you £2.60 for twice the amount that you need. And they've got two little plastic grommets in there that stick them together. But all you've got to do is clip that on there, start your gimbal, and you've got a 3-meter stabilized boom. How cool's that? So it's cost me £80 to get that, to go out to 3 meters and be a boom camera.
Oh, fantastic.
And it's
that's clever.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Because it's because it's got the geo stabling gyro thing on it, it means it's super smooth and gorgeous. And the other thing is, because of there's one of the modes that you can have where it points straight down, so it means that you can put this straight up and get 3 meters of height on it. So I have effectively the longest selfie pole in the world.
Fantastic.
So you have the best selfie stick ever.
Belfie pole.
And I've also
it's a belfie stick at that point if you've got 9 feet, yeah.
Well, you get 8 of these clips for £2 from B&Q. So I've got another 2 of them, and I'm going to make a little clamp that holds on a wireless transmitter, and I'll get a little screen down here so that I can see what I'm looking at on the end of that wirelessly. There you go.
That's nice, isn't it?
I was quite proud of myself with that. Oh,
B&Q.
Well, the clip, the 22mm pipe clips. The 22mm pipe clips were from B&Q.
Ah, so you had that. Oh, fantastic.
I had the boom pole before. I had the gimbal before, and the boom pole you all knew about from the other week.
So. That looks really stable as well.
Oh, it is, yeah. Super stable.
That's slick.
Yeah, nice. There you go. That's my cool thing. Where can we get a hold of you, Lee?
You can get hold of me on Twitter at Solium Says, and you can get me on my website, which is www.soliumsays.com. And also, a new one, I've just teamed up with Mike Vardy, who is a productivity guru, and I'm doing posts and app reviews on productivityist.com.
Cool. Well,
that's fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It's good fun. He's a very, very funny chap.
Mike's phenomenal. I adore Mike.
Yeah, he's awesome.
We're not going to see at Macworld.
I know.
Yeah, I know. It's a shame, isn't it?
Because, seriously, Schechter and I went rampaging through downtown Portland once, and it was unbelievable. Like, if anybody's met Mike Schechter and then met me, and then think about both of us in the same room at the same time. Yeah.
Apparently, I should have said that was a clip, pipe clip, not a grommet. I did say pipe clip at the start, so there
we go. Yeah. Anyway, congrats, Lee. That's awesome. I can't wait to read them.
Well done, mate.
It's good fun. It's good fun.
Kelly.
Yeah?
Where can we get a hold of you?
Everywhere. You can find me on Twitter and app.net as Verso. You can also find me writing and podcasting over at macobserver.com. Sometimes I'm on Daily Observations, and sometimes I'm just writing up stuff to explain. And you can also catch me on The Mac Show on this very network and doing the after show with Mike Rose at aftershowpodcast.com.
Excellent, Mrs. Thank you very much. Doc, where are you, sir?
I'm on the internet or at a pub somewhere drinking whiskey or at a tea shop drinking tea or at a sake shop drinking sake. Anywhere, everywhere is at Doc Rock. And also on the unofficial Apple weblog, also known as Tua, but any Twitter, Instagram, FaceSpace, my book, whatever, it's all at Doc Rock. You can find me. Thank you for having me.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. And where are you, Risey boy?
Paul on the Twitter, mate, and forever, BritishTechnoBoat.com.
Excellent, pal. Thank you. We'll be back again next week. Not sure on the date, but we're definitely going to be here, and we'll have some kind of show of some description, probably. Till then, thanks for listening.